Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into a topic that really feels like a watershed moment. It's the accelerating pace of AI's transformation. And it just has that, you know, that distinct feel of a once-in-a-generation shift, almost like the Netscape moment for artificial intelligence.
It absolutely does, yeah. The speed at which generative AI is not just evolving, but actively being adopted across industries. It's something we rarely see with new technology. Organizations are putting it into production at a really incredible rate.
So our mission for this deep dive is to, you know, cut through the noise. We want to unpack the really practical implications and the strategic opportunities that generative AI and AI agents present for your business. It's really about understanding how AI fundamentally redefines work, how it helps create, you know, tangible business value, and crucially, what this all means for you and your role.
Exactly. And to give you that perspective, our insights today, they pull from a pretty robust stack of sources. We've got top-tier industry reports, in-depth research papers, and some really compelling real-world case studies from leading organizations. We've looked at material from Forbes, Google Cloud, Dell, and there's this fantastic handbook titled AI Value Creators from IBM as well.
Okay, that sounds like a solid foundation. So let's start with this idea of a Netscape moment for AI. When Netscape arrived, it like completely democratized the internet, right? Made it tangible and accessible for everyone, not just a privileged few.
And that's precisely the parallel we're seeing with generative AI right now. It's no longer just a tool for specialized experts or, you know, data scientists. It's becoming accessible for everyone. What's so compelling here is that those who proactively embrace this wave of AI, they are genuinely poised to reshape the future. Just like the early internet adopters, those who don't adapt, well, they risk being left behind, face significant business consequences. It's a profound fork in the road, really.
It feels like it's more than just the explicit tools we interact with, though, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I like to think of it as AI becoming ambient intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, imagine it like ambient light. It's subtle, always there in the background, assisting with countless daily business operations without you even like consciously noticing it. It's just helping.
Exactly. Ambient is a great word for it. And that leads right into Steve Jobs' famous idea, you know, the computer as a bicycle for the mind. If that's true, then generative AI and agents together, well, they're becoming the bicycle for your business. They're automating tasks, they're sparking creative ideas, and really empowering your teams to achieve so much more, making it feel like you're doing the work of, well, several people.
Okay, so here's where the fundamental shift truly lies, I think. Is moving from what we've called plus AI to AI plus E. So transitioning from processes where humans are supported by technology to processes that are fundamentally run by technology, which then supports or, you know, assists humans. Mm. And to truly achieve this, you have to like dissect your entire business workflow into granular components. Right? Pinpoint where AI can take over the rote, repetitive stuff and then build the human role on top of that. It's complete reimagining.
It really is. And this fundamental shift, maybe surprisingly, brings us back to some foundational principles that aren't new at all. If we look at the bigger picture, it immediately brings to mind Michael Hammer's framework. You know, 30 years old, business process reengineering, or BPR, it remains profoundly relevant for how organizations should approach AI adoption today.
That's fascinating. How, you know, old wisdom applies to new tech. Mm-hmm. What were the core ideas of that framework, if it's so relevant now?
Well, Hammer's BPR framework, it rests on three core pillars. First, it's about a fundamental rethinking and radical redesign of business processes. We're talking dramatic improvements, you know, in cost, quality, service, speed, not just incremental tweaks.
Okay, dramatic.
Second, it calls for envisioning entirely new work strategies, designing processes from the ground up, and then importantly, managing the complex technological and organizational changes that come with that. And third, crucially, it's about leveraging disruptive technologies, which back then was IT, but now it's clearly AI to challenge and, well, overturn traditional approaches to work.
So AI isn't just about adopting a new piece of software. It really demands radical business change. Like, for example, AI could transform a company from just selling products to delivering outcomes or even insights. But that's a monumental shift, isn't it? It means redesigning supply chains, retraining employees, completely redefining customer relationships.
It is. It's huge. And that raises a really important question for any business leader. Where do you even begin? Our sources strongly emphasize a strategic approach. Start small, think big. The idea is to begin with high-impact, manageable use cases where AI can deliver some quick wins, you know, build momentum. That could be automating repetitive tasks in finance, maybe optimizing marketing campaigns, or using AI agents to enhance customer service, things like that.
And when we talk about success, Our sources offer this concise AI success equation as a core framework.
Yeah.
It's models plus data plus governance plus use cases. These four elements combine strategically. They're the essential building blocks.
That's it. Those are the crucial building blocks for achieving real value with AI. And within that equation, data. Data is truly becoming both a key differentiator and, honestly, a valuable product in itself. It's kind of striking to realize how much proprietary enterprise data holds immense value, because typically less than 1% of a company's unique enterprise data is actually found in common large language models, the LLMs.
Wow, less than 1%.
Yeah. So curating, governing, and really understanding the lineage of your data, this whole concept of data as a product, is absolutely vital for competitive advantage in this AI era.
Okay, so when we dive into creating real-world value with AI, it often comes down to a strategy our sources call renovate to innovate. They explain this using something called the Acumen Curve, which helps classify AI investments and prioritize them, sort of like a spectrum. On one end, you're spending money to save money, that's the renovation bit, and on the other, you're spending money to make money, that's the innovation.
Precisely. And this leads directly to a really powerful concept called the shift left, shift right strategy. Shifting left means automating tasks and optimizing processes early in a workflow, you know, to generate time and cost savings. The genius part is that these savings can then shift right and be reinvested to fund new, truly transformational business models. It's like a self-sustaining feedback loop for growth.
Okay, so let's get concrete then. What are some compelling examples of this shift left, the renovation part, that lead to significant cost savings?
Oh, there are plenty. Think about something as common as internal automation. Instead of employees navigating clunky HR systems to book vacation days, AI can handle this with just a simple natural language prompt. Easy. Right.
It takes out the friction.
Totally. Or in healthcare, there's the early detection of diabetic foot ulcers using connected bath mats that track heat. This seemingly simple application can dramatically reduce annual treatment costs from, like, roughly $58,000 down to about $17,000 per year.
That's incredible savings.
Yeah.
Just per person. And I know IBM has done some pretty remarkable work internally with HR transformation, too.
They really have. IBM completely overhauled its employee transfer process. They used AI, reduced failure rates to practically zero, and returned 4,000 hours of what they call think time back to the business. That's huge. And this single initiative contributed to an astonishing $3 billion in aggregate savings across the company from similar AI-driven process improvements.
$3 billion. Wow. Okay. Customer service is another huge pain point for so many businesses. How is AI shifting left there?
Oh, it's a massive area. Companies like Klarna, CVS, even the Oregon Department of Motor Vehicles, they've successfully handled millions of customer calls using digital labor, achieving double-digit deflection rates, meaning the AI handles it, no human needed. Klarna's AI assistant, for example, now handles two-thirds of all their customer service chats. That's the equivalent of 700 full-time agents. And it has reduced repeat inquiries by a quarter. Just massive efficiency.
That's staggering. Okay, and on the tech side, what about code development?
Yeah, AI coding assistants are now really widely adopted for tasks like code refactoring, documentation, answering developer questions. Just automating code summarization alone frees up developers for much higher value, you know, creative work. IBM's WatsonX code assistant for IBMC is a great example. It translates legacy COBOL code to Java. And similarly, Toyota's Woven. They achieved a 50% total cost of ownership savings in autonomous driving with Google Cloud's AI hypercomputer. Huge TCO reduction.
So those are really powerful shift left examples. Now let's talk shift right, the innovation, creating entirely new business models. What are some classic stories of success or maybe even failure here?
Well, a prime example of what not to do is probably Kodak. Uh-huh. They actually invented the digital camera back in 1975, believe it or not, but tragically failed to shift from just being a film business to the broader memory-making business.
Right. They missed the boat.
Completely. This strategic inertia led to their, well, spectacular failure when photography went digital. On the flip side, Garmin offers a really compelling success story. They started with portable car GPS systems, right? But their leaders realized they were actually in the broader tracking and mapping business. They successfully shifted right, expanding into services for marine, hiking, golf, and crucially fostering communities around these activities. They embraced a new identity.
That's smart. And in the insurance world, what does a shift right look like with AI?
Okay, so one insurance company used AI agents for dynamic pricing, but also to proactively send weather alerts to policyholders. The goal was to minimize claims before they even happened. Proactive, not reactive.
Interesting. Did it work?
Yeah, they found that 52% of policyholders actually acted on these alerts, which led to only 6.1% making a claim for a weather-related incident. That's a really concrete example of how AI can enable a proactive value-add business model, builds loyalty, saves money for everyone involved.
We've covered a lot of these industry-specific examples, but AI also has really broad applicability across common business tasks, right? What we call horizontal AI use cases.
Indeed. Think about IT automation. AI can check the health of digital certificates, address vulnerabilities, optimize power management, just the basics. Our sources project that over 1 billion new logical applications will be created by 2028. AI will be critical just to manage that complexity.
A billion. Wow. And what about digital labor? That sounds like a powerful concept.
Digital labor essentially automates entire sequences of tasks within workflows. It significantly increases human bandwidth. For instance, sport clips, the hair salon chain, they reduced candidate outreach for new hires from 3 hours down to just 3 minutes using digital workers. It frees up the human employees to focus on more strategic, human-centric work, the stuff AI can't do.
Okay, and then the next level of productivity seems to be AI agents. What really distinguishes them?
Yeah, agents are truly next generation. They are goal-oriented, meaning you give them a high-level objective and they independently figure out the tasks and subtasks needed to achieve it. They leverage tools like scraping websites or running code. They remember past interactions to learn and adapt. They can even call upon other specialized agents.
So, like, teamwork for AIs.
Kinda, yeah. Imagine an AI agent planning your entire Hawaii surfing trip. Not just finding flights, but gathering real-time weather and tide data, then consulting external surfing agents to pinpoint the best spots for your specific skill level. It goes way beyond just providing information, it acts on your behalf.
That's pretty cool. Now let's explore some of those vertical AI use cases, those intriguing industry-specific examples that really show how AI is transforming different sectors.
Okay, in agriculture, AI-assisted precision spraying. It can identify 26 different crop diseases in just 0.2 seconds. This reduces pesticide use by up to 90%. And get this, AI-powered lettuce bots are already harvesting 10% of the entire U.S. lettuce supply.
Wow. Lettuce bots. That's incredibly precise and good for sustainability, too. How about the accounting profession? Feels very traditional.
AI is rapidly shifting accounting. While yes, preparatory services will be largely automated, AI is actually freeing accountants to move into more consultative auditing roles. AI can draft financial disclosure statements, even update them with GAAP rules. This lets the human accountants focus on higher value advisory work, strategic insights.
Makes sense. Education is certainly grappling with AI. What's the impact there?
Well, AI can significantly reduce the burden of things like assessment and lesson planning for educators, helping them manage those high student-to-teacher ratios more effectively. Pepperdine University, for instance, uses Gemini for real-time translated captioning and notes in multi-language settings, makes learning far more accessible.
Healthcare is another sector with, frankly, unsustainable costs. How's AI addressing that?
That's a critical area, yeah. AI is streamlining clinical documentation, improving communication between providers, automating insurance authorizations. It's directly tackling the nearly 40 hours a week practitioners currently spend on just admin tasks.
40 hours, it's a full-time job right there.
Exactly. PwC uses AI agents to streamline admin work for oncology clinics. Sami Saoud automates patient summaries with a 13% productivity increase, achieving 100% AI-generated summaries, leading to more accurate diagnoses, apparently. Even IVF outcomes are being enhanced with AI through companies like Fertility. It's touching many areas.
What about the legal field? Still lots of paper there, right?
Yeah, but AI is making inroads. It handles much of the heavy lifting like document review and legal research. This allows attorneys to minimize time on preliminary lower-level reviews and focus on the more cerebral, strategic work. It's also fascinating how evidence itself is evolving. WhatsApp messages are now used in Italian divorce cases, and you have things like New York City's automated employment decision tool regulations addressing notice requirements and independent auditors for AI recruiting tools. Vigilance is needed.
Right. And in the creative industries, where you'd think human creativity is irreplaceable.
AI is proving to be a powerful augment for creative processes, not a replacement. L'Oreal, for instance, uses tools like Veo 2 and Imagen 3 to generate diverse cinematic shots, allows them to produce hundreds of new videos in over 20 countries much faster. And Mondelez achieved an impressive 25% increase in ROI from generatively created content using Imagen. So AI isn't replacing creativity, it's amplifying it, making it more efficient.
These examples really paint a picture of AI's broad reach. So just to quickly highlight a few more from our sources, Mercedes-Benz uses AI for conversational search, e-commerce sales assistance. POD has created a world's smartest billboard, adapting messages in real time using Gemini. Geotab analyzes billions of data points daily from millions of vehicles for fleet optimization. UPS building a digital twin of its entire distribution network.
Yeah, and Deloitte offers a CareFinder agent for finding in-network providers in under a minute. SafeRate uses an AI mortgage agent for personalized quotes in under 30 seconds. OSTTRA automates writing proposals. Pinnacle Assurance accelerated repetitive tasks with a remarkable 96% employee time savings.
96%.
I know. And there's Beyond 12 with an AI coach for first-generation college students, the New York State DMV transforming driver services, the Qatari Ministry of Labor launched OQOL, an AI platform connecting graduates to jobs. And Studio B uses Gemini to summarize and respond to hundreds of emails for its founder, freeing up time to support young artists. These examples, from huge corporations to innovative startups, they really highlight AI's vast and varied applicability. It's everywhere.
Okay, so as we look at all these transformations, it really brings us to the human element. For individuals, for businesses, this truly feels like a lift, shift, rift, or cliff moment. What exactly does that mean for us in the workforce?
It just underscores the agency of upskilling, plain and simple. By 2027, our sources indicate that 40% of current job roles across G2000 organizations will be redefined or even eliminated due to generative AI adoption. The research consistently shows IT training and skills development are among the most important investments for improving employee experience and productivity.
But adoption isn't always easy, is it? It's not always a smooth transition for the employees themselves.
Not at all. There are significant concerns, real anxieties. Our data shows 45% of employees worry about job displacement, 43% report difficulty keeping up with new automation requirements, and 39% cite a lack of needed IT support. And tellingly, only 6% of organizations report no challenges at all. So everyone's feeling it.
So how do we reframe this narrative? Is AI truly a job destroyer, or can it be spun as a new-collar job creator?
We and our sources firmly view it as a new-collar job creator. Look, digital labor handles the tedious, low-value tasks that, frankly, nobody really wants to do anyway. This allows human employees to focus on the higher-value stuff, creative problem-solving, critical thinking, strategy. It's not about replacing employees, it's about empowering them and effectively facilitating what we call hiring avoidance for non-value creation roles. You hire for the new skills.
It reminds me of that concept of Centaur Chess, you know, where human-AI collaboration really shines.
That's a perfect analogy. In Centaur Chess, humans augmented by AI consistently outperform either humans working alone or AI working alone. It's about amplifying human performance, expanding our capabilities, not diminishing them.
And if we look at disruptors like Uber, what lessons can we learn from them for navigating this AI era?
Well, Uber's success wasn't built on inventing some radical new technology from scratch, right? They combine readily available tech smartphones, digital payments, GPS with totally new business models. Their leaders constantly stopped to solve problems they could make better with technology every day. That was their mantra. This highlights that success in the AI era won't just come from inventing new AI models, but from ingeniously applying existing capabilities in novel problem-solving ways.
Okay, so what does a robust skills program actually look like for this AI era? Our sources offer some actionable strategies, these levers of clever.
Right. First, hire for curiosity. Prioritize candidates with that innate desire to understand the why. Because specific technical skills, they evolve so rapidly. Curiosity ensures adaptability. Second, recruit digitally minded talent. Look for individuals who instinctively embrace innovations to improve efficiency, speed, accuracy, even if they don't have traditional computer science degrees. Think community colleges, veterans. These are often untapped talent pools for this kind of mindset.
And once you have these talented individuals, how do you effectively track and develop those skills? That seems key.
Absolutely. You need to inventory your skills with a central auditable skills taxonomy. IBM, for example, uses a 5-level system for its technical sales teams. Goes from foundational knowledge all the way up to actual invention. They also prioritize a badging program for credential authenticity and rigor. It ensures that what someone says they know, they actually can do. IBM expects to issue its 1,000,000th badge next year. 2025, so it's a serious commitment.
And learning isn't a static one-and-done thing, right? It has to be continuous in this environment.
Absolutely not. You have to embrace learning and forgetting curves. We all forget things. So, design modular learning that can be easily revisited during those scramble learning moments, you know, when you suddenly need that specific skill. The learning should be easily accessible for quick refreshers right when they need it most. Just-in-time learning.
I remember hearing about Bradley Cooper's intense preparation for A Star is Born. That sounds like a great illustration of this idea of instruction, imitation, and collaboration.
It really is. Cooper spent 3 years preparing for just 42 days of filming. It shows the deep commitment required for true mastery. For AI skills, this translates to encouraging safe sandboxes, places to experiment without breaking things, and leveraging free trial software like Google Colab, IBM Cloud Light Services, or IBM TechSome for hands-on, low-risk experimentation. It's really about learning by doing.
Finally, it's clear that culture matters immensely here. It's about being a skills verb, not just a skills noun.
Exactly. Leaders have to lead by doing. They need to model the desired learning behavior. IBM's chief human resources officer, for example, personally skilled up on AI, showed it was important. IBM even had a CEO-led skills challenge. 160,000 employees voluntarily participated. They made 8 million inferences daily, generated over 12,000 prototype projects and feature requests. And crucially, 88% reported increased AI skills afterwards. It's about embedding that culture of continuous learning right from the top down.
Okay, so as we navigate this whole AI landscape,
the
concepts of trust, governance, ethics, they're absolutely paramount. Our sources highlight this critical paradox. Responsibility and disruption must coexist for AI adoption to be sustainable.
Right. And this brings up a really foundational question. How do you actually build that trust? It's kind of like Superman's moral compass, right? Your company's core values will be crucial. They establish that positive reputation and foster trust in how you use AI. They provide that guiding star when things get tricky.
And LLMs, while incredibly powerful, they definitely come with their own unique set of challenges we need to be super aware of.
They certainly do. First, there's the knowledge cutoff date. LLMs are really expensive to train, so they typically have a specific date, after which they lack native knowledge of newer events. Techniques like retrieval augmented generation, or RAG, help address this by feeding them new info, but it's a critical limitation to understand.
Right. And what about hallucinations? I've heard some crazy stories about LLMs just making things up entirely.
Oh yeah, that's a very real problem. LLMs can fabricate information, from generating a Shakespeare rap battle in Hamlet that never existed, to lawyers citing completely fake cases in court, like in that Mata v. Avianca case. This unequivocally underscores the absolute need for human due diligence. Verification is key when working with AI-generated content. You just can't trust it blindly.
And beyond just accuracy, there are pretty significant resource consumption concerns too, aren't there? The power, the water.
Yes. Training and running these large models have enormous power and water needs. It's staggering. For example, one data center near Des Moines, Iowa, reportedly uses 20% of the entire city's water supply just for cooling. The environmental footprint is substantial and something we need to keep talking about.
Wow, 20%. And what about the legal minefield of copyright? That seems like a mess.
It's a complex and rapidly evolving. LLMs are often trained on vast amounts of scraped internet data, including datasets like Books 3, which apparently contain hundreds of thousands of legally posted books. So naturally, this has led to numerous lawsuits. The musician Will.im's concept of digital essence speaks to this growing need to protect individual and creative rights in this new digital era.
Okay, so deploying AI also means expanding your business's surface area of attack. That sounds ominous. What new vulnerabilities should we be particularly aware of?
There are several key ones. One is data poisoning, malicious actors injecting corrupted data into training sets. This could potentially make the AI believe, I don't know, broccolini is a side dish for cheesecake, or even turn a cat into a toaster using tools like Nightshade. It messes with the AI's understanding of reality.
Turning a cat into a toaster, okay.
Right. Then there are deepfakes, AI-generated media used for fraud, like that shocking case where a finance worker paid out $25 million after a video call with a deepfake CFO.
Yeah, I read about that. Terrifying. And prompt injection attacks? What are those exactly?
They can be quite insidious. These manipulate LLMs to behave inappropriately. It could be tricking an AI to give tax evasion methods by role-playing as a legal historian, or even causing autonomous vehicles to swerve due to strategically placed white dots on the road. Even an AI recruiting tool could be fooled by a resume filled with buzzwords hidden away in an XML file. And finally, there's the steal now, crack later threat. Encrypted data being exfiltrated today with the anticipation that future quantum computing will be able to decrypt it. emphasizes the need for robust security now and for the future.
So given all these risks, how do we ensure trust? What are the practical good actor levers for businesses to pull here?
Okay, four key ones. First, fairness. Actively addressing and monitoring for bias in the data used to train AI models. For example, early DALL-E versions initially showed fewer women in general prompts. Language itself can encode bias with terms like doctor versus nurse. We have to watch for that. Second, robustness. Ensuring AI systems are secure against adversarial attacks and these jailbreaking attempts. That resume attack, the John Stacava example, highlights this need. Emerging guardian models are being developed specifically to protect prompts.
Okay, fairness, robustness. What else? Explainability. That sounds particularly crucial for accountability.
It absolutely is. AI systems must provide decisions and suggestions that are understandable to us humans, to users and developers. Enables auditing. You know, an AI might classify an owl by its eyes, but classify a horse by the barn background in an image. We need to know why. Frameworks like LIME and ESHAP help provide insights into why an AI made a particular decision. Vital for accountability and building confidence.
Right, knowing the why. And lineage. What does that entail for AI?
Lineage ensures AI systems meticulously detail their history. The data used, the development process, deployment, maintenance, the whole life cycle. For full auditability, it's kind of like tracing water sources for quality assurance, provides critical transparency.
What about regulation then? Should we be regulating the tech itself or how it's used?
Our sources strongly advise regulating the usage of AI. Focus on the high-risk use cases, the potential for harm, rather than stifling the technology's innovation itself. The EU AI Act, for example, uses that four-tier classification system, unacceptable, high, limited, minimal risk, with penalties based on potential harm. It's a targeted approach, aiming to foster innovation while protecting society.
So how do we integrate all of this into like an end-to-end governed process?
Well, it starts with creating a comprehensive model inventory, knowing what you have, followed by automated capture of training data and metrics. Then comes rigorous evaluation for accuracy, drift, bias, all the potential issues. Once reviewed and approved, the model is securely deployed. But ultimately, what truly underpins strong governance? It's fundamentally a matter of company culture. Because AI that people trust is AI that people will actually use. End of story.
Okay, moving to the future then. What's on the horizon for AI? Is it really going to be one model to rule them all or something else emerging?
Yeah, the initial trend was certainly towards bigger is better, right? GPT-1 to GPT-3 saw that staggering 10,000x size increase. However, that myth is rapidly being challenged. Small language models, or SLMs, are now emerging as incredibly powerful alternatives.
SLMs. Okay, yeah. What are the key advantages of these smaller models?
Well, primarily they're generally far less expensive to host and run inference on. We're talking like less than 0.25 for $1 million output tokens compared to maybe $60 for some larger models. That's a huge cost difference. They also offer much faster inference with significantly lower power consumption. Big implications for scalability and sustainability.
So what drives their performance if they're smaller? That seems kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah, it does a bit. There are a few key drivers, though. First, data curation. High quality, meticulously curated data is absolutely paramount for SLMs, quality over quantity. While many LLM providers are transparent about the amount of data they use, very few disclose the actual sources. IBM Granite models, for example, they offer full data disclosure and actually scored highly in Stanford's Transparency Index for that clarity.
Okay, so curated data and domain specialization. That sounds like a big factor too.
Absolutely critical. Tailoring models for specific industries or tasks dramatically improves their performance. Makes sense, right? IBM Research's Granite.2ob.cobol model, specialized specifically in COBOL, significantly outperformed ChatGPT for COBOL code completions. This proves that focus expertise can often beat general knowledge for specific tasks.
And model distillation. That sounds pretty fascinating. How does that work?
Model distillation is where a larger teacher model trains a smaller student model to behave similarly. It effectively transfers knowledge, but into a smaller package. Llama 3.14005b, for instance, trains the smaller Llama 3.18b. The Vicuna chatbot famously impressed GPT-4 by achieving 90% ChatGPT quality using this method, shows how much you can achieve in a smaller footprint.
What about reasoning? Can these SLMs handle complex thought processes, or do you still need a giant model for that deep thinking?
Increasingly, yes, they can. SLMs are becoming remarkably adept at chain of thought reasoning, thinking step by step to arrive at better answers. DeepSeek R1, for instance, provides these incredibly detailed thought processes for even a simple riddle. It shows how they can reason more effectively and, importantly, transparently.
And mixture of experts models. That sounds like a collaborative approach, maybe.
It is, exactly. This architecture involves multiple specialized models collaborating on different parts of a task. So instead of one giant model trying to do everything, you have this panel of experts each tackling what it does best. Google's Gemini Pro and Nano and Mixtral 8x7B are prime examples of this approach. It allows for a combination of strengths.
Okay, so with all these different models, SLMs, LLMs, mixtures, how do you decide which one to actually use for a given task? Sounds like it could get complicated.
That's where model routing comes in. Think of it like a smart traffic controller. A router can intelligently direct tasks to the best suited model within a library of both SLMs and LLMs. This often results in better overall performance than just relying on one large model alone. For example, one study showed a router achieved 72% performance on a benchmark compared to 68% for a large LLM alone, just by intelligently selecting the right model for the job each time.
Smart routing.
Okay.
Beyond the models themselves, what's the next level of productivity for AI going to look like? Where are we headed?
Agentic systems, definitely. Yeah. Agents are inherently goal-oriented. You give them a high-level objective, say, plan my vacation, and they independently generate the tasks and subtasks needed to achieve it. They use tools like web scraping, running code, and critically, they store information in memory to learn over time. Creates a really personalized experience. While human supervision can be helpful, especially early on, to improve their adaptability, their growing autonomy is really the key to unlocking that next level of productivity.
And what does all this mean for the very nature of computing itself? It really feels like we're at some kind of turning point.
We truly are. We are entering the era of generative computing. It's emerging as a new fundamental building block of computing, taking its place alongside classical computing with bits and quantum computing with qubits. It represents a profound shift from those fragile old rules-based systems, like the early Cold War Russian translation efforts, to neural networks that learn from vast amounts of data and context, leading to groundbreaking advancements, like language translation, that were once thought impossible.
And how do transformers fit into this massive shift? They seem central.
Transformers capture the contextual meaning of words in a sentence. They model cross-relationships across the entire input, not just looking sequentially. This breakthrough in understanding context, rather than just sequence, is the foundational secret sauce behind the power of today's large language models. It enables them to generate coherent, relevant text at an unprecedented scale.
So in this new generative computing paradigm, how do we program the interpreter? What does that mean?
The idea is that LLMs should be built, and applications developed with LLMs, in a structured, principled way, not just throwing prompts at them randomly. This means applying traditional software engineering principles, like exception handling, to make models safer and more efficient. It involves using structured prompts that clearly demarcate instructions from data, makes the interaction more robust, less prone to those prompt injection attacks we talked about.
Makes sense. Engineering discipline for AI.
Exactly. And finally, the increasing demand for complex reasoning by LLMs means speed at inference time. That's when the model processes a request and generates a response, becomes absolutely critical. This is driving the need for entirely new hardware architectures. Things like IBM's North Pole chip, which is designed for faster batch inference and has memory right on the chip. Moving beyond traditional von Neumann architectures to support this new, demanding style of computing.
Wow, what an incredible journey into the world of AI today. So just to recap, we've explored how AI represents this profound Netscape moment, offering immense opportunities for value creation by, well, redefining work, necessitating comprehensive upskilling across the workforce, and demanding responsible, trust-centric governance.
Right. And this isn't just about adopting some new technology. It's really about reimagining what's truly possible when human ingenuity and AI seamlessly collaborate. Our sources make it abundantly clear that AI offers a concrete, actionable path to address the global productivity decline we've been seeing, empowering businesses, empowering individuals to thrive by embracing it strategically.
So this brings us to our final thought for you, our listener, something to maybe mull over. What problems are you walking by every day that AI could solve or make better? Think about it. The opportunity is truly in your hands.